Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Jared Fredericks from Northeast South Dakota back on the show. We've had him on a bunch of times. Jared's a longtime fishing guide down there in Northeast South Dakota. He's also a traveling tournament angler, and he's a father of a couple of young kids, which comes up in this conversation. You know, we get an update on how the fishing is down in his part of the world and dive into the topic of taking kids fishing. Jared's obviously uniquely qualified, being a father himself and a long-time fishing guide. He's guided a lot of families, guided a lot of groups where, you know, there was young kids involved. And you got to do things maybe a little bit differently to make it better for the kids. I think it's a great topic to dive into, so I appreciate Jared's time for that. You can find his stuff or just inquire or ask questions on Facebook at South Dakota Fishing Guide. You can also find him at sdicefish.com. Well, let's get into it here with Jared Fredericks on the JMO Podcast. The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO Podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. There's phenomenal pan fishing. There's a fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. If you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglaciallakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description of this podcast. Making great gear choices is a big deal when it comes to being efficient and effective each and every time we head out onto the ice. Head to summitfishingequipment.com to check out what they've got. As a pioneer of forward-facing sonar portability, their shuttle design and carbon fiber pole mounting kit make it super easy to switch from boat usage right out onto the ice. Again, head to the website. The link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code SUMMIT10 at checkout for a discount. All right, Jared. Well, let's get this started off here, man. I'm just looking for a little bit of a fishing update, man. How are things going down there? Maybe an ice update. You've been out. You've been doing a little bit of guiding. I haven't talked to you in a while, so I guess I don't even know how fall wrapped up for you or if you got it much fishing in there. I know you're a busy guy, but what's the update?
Fall was good. Fall, we found some, finally got in some perch. It was a really good run. I had like 28 trips this fall, and we limited out 25 times. So it was pretty good, actually. And that's kind of unheard of lately. We haven't seen perch numbers like this in quite some time, but this winter it's been hit or miss with perch because we're dealing with gen clear water and no snow. So the fish are very, very spooky, and it's becoming a waiting game. You get near them and you can't get within 50 feet of them. So you just pray to the Lord that those fish will come over to you and start biting. Because from now on, we've just been super clear water, and it's been tough getting close to these fish. But when you do get on, they're nice, and we're starting to see the jumbos come back. We're starting to flood, so the flood obviously helps the fishing. Our perch numbers are coming back because the flood, the drought is what killed all our perch. And I know that with the drought, if we're in the Midwest, all the numbers are down. I know they're talking about restocking Devil's Lake with perch. So I think we get into this flood situation like we did last year. Our perch got back into the sloughs and spawned into their spawning grounds for once because they actually got up in there. So we're seeing numbers come back. We're excited about it. I just need some snow cover to get us to go over top of these fish so we can actually catch them because it's been real, real tough getting close to these fish.
You know, I'm so curious about that. That is like number one topic right now, is trying to decipher what to do about spooky fish. You know, part of that conversation is maybe trying to figure out why they're spooky, or a lot of debate on, you know, is, you know, drilling, walking around on the ice, whatever. Is it better from one body of water to the other, or is it sometimes just, you know, better to find some key spots and just hunker down and make the best of, you know, wherever you're at?
Well, this comes back to my tournament fishing. It seems like when I do tournaments, I learned a lot about how when I'd be sampling some fish on a lake and I'm like, they're just not biting today. All of a sudden you come in and like seven guys just crush them today. I learned over fishing probably over 50 tournaments that nine times out of 10, somewhere on the lake, they're biting. You just got to find that active school. So sometimes it's worth, if you know you got good fish there and you know they've been biting lately, that you just got to find the school that's biting. And then the number one rule I tell my customers, never leave fish to find fish because you never find them again. So do I wait on fish? No, not necessarily. But if I know I have like a obvious bite that's going to happen in the evening, we'll stay there and wait them out if I can't find anything else. But I started a new guiding way this year is we have new live scope shacks where we haul customers around hydraulic shacks that lift up with a button and we can go just as fast as a snow bear. We can get six people in there. So I can drop clients onto fish. I can use my side-by-side to spook the fish back to them, kind of basically herd the fish to them. And then also go look for more fish. So it gives me the ability to, if I have clients on fish and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go look for more active fish. You guys stay here, catch the fish you can, and I'll go find us an active school to move on to. And so generally speaking, our lakes are pretty small, so I can cover a whole lake in half a day and know real quick if I can find that school that's biting or not. And if I can't, then we'll cut our losses, go to another lake. But for us to jump lakes sometimes takes just too much time. And like my grandpa said, you're not going to catch any fish if your line's not in the water. So, that running and gunning thing works to a point. But if you're switching five lakes, that's a lot of time. Your customers are not fishing. So I try to keep them fishing as long as I can.
I think those are some of the debates you have in your head, right? It's like if you don't have forward sonar and you're not necessarily seeing how many are down there to even know, it's like making some of those decisions is kind of tricky. But when you're kind of gathering information in the morning and you're drilling those first few holes, like what is it that you're looking for that you feel like makes you comfortable? Like, okay, these are the kind of fish that we're going to sort these ones out.
Well, I look for fish that are not moving and mean that like I won't fish near a group. A group of people is the worst thing to fish these days because all you're doing is pressuring those fish and just running them to death. The crowd fishing is just, now it's even worse. And somehow we caught fish without live scope back in the day, and I don't know how we did it, but we did it. It seems like if you're in a crowd of people and you're trying to get on a school of fish and people are driving, literally people driving by 300 feet will spook fish. It's the worst thing. Like, I just dread someone driving close to me. If we were waiting on fish for like 20 minutes since I see someone coming at us, even the game warden, when he pulls up to us to check, I'm like, oh, we're not going to catch any fish now. Just pack it up because he's going to spook all our fish when he comes up to us. And it is what it is. And that's his job. But a lot of times they kill our bites because they roll up on you and all the fish are gone. Like, it's crazy how sensitive they are. And I think these fish are getting sensitive to live scope because I know a lot of guys that will turn the live scopes off and fish blindly or use still a Vexilar just to get those fish to bite because I think fish are getting educated to live scopes. When you have 10,000 people on a lake using live scopes, if I shine my live scope in forward mode at some of these fish, they'll take off. Just turning it will turn them off. So it's there's something to it. I don't know the answer quite yet, but I'm sure someone's going to come up with an option to like tone down your live scope or something to make them less weary. But I've seen crappies stay 45 feet from us. And when I turn the live scope and I turn the gain up, it would literally spook them. So something about that power with live scope makes these fish sensitive. Like, but at dark, it's not so big a deal, but during the daylights, high sun days, they're very, very sensitive to pressure. We're actually finding now that if we run tip ups and jaw jackers and dead sticks, we're doing probably better fishing than we would just jigging. The dead sticks, it's like a new thing these days. It's like that was going away for the longest time. Now it's like, you want to catch a lot of fish, you better be running dead sticks. It's just crazy how that has come back into fruition about, like, you know, everyone's like, oh, dead sticks are out of the realm. We don't use it anymore. But now I'm going back to them because it produces fish and it catches a lot of fish and sometimes catches more than jigging fish because for whatever reason, it's the dead stick is back in. And I don't know. Again, I've never seen our water so clear like this ever in my entire life. So things are changing. I don't know what it is. We've started to get zebra mussels down here, and I don't really think that's quite the culprit yet. But our waters are getting super clean, and it's a problem because we can't get near these fish. In the boat, I can get close to them because we have waves and crashing waves, or I can cast at them when I see ahead. But ice fishing, there's no casting at them. I literally joked to my customers the other day, we might just take a chainsaw and cut out a 40 by 1 foot wide section so we can cast these fish when they come
out. Yeah, totally.
I mean, it's no joke. I mean, I've been half tempted with thinner ice these days. I could easily do it. And when those fish come underneath there, we could ice troll. We could do all kinds of stuff. We'd catch a lot more fish. And I mean, my customers can see those fish and I can find the fish. That's not a problem. It's just getting those fish to come underneath us and stay underneath us. When they come, finally, you know, I push them, they come underneath us. You catch one, you're like, oh, now we got to catch 95 more. You know, like it's kind of repetitive that you just, I basically right now I look for dirty water if I can, and that seems to help with the live scope thing. But the clear water and shallow water is just, oh man, it's just, I shave my hair for a reason, because I'd pull my hair out if I had to do it every day and watch fish just spook. You know, they even walking, you walk over them and they spook. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. I take my kids out fishing a lot and they are just running around. So now we have to set up jaw jackers, tip ups a long ways away. So when they're playing around in the minnows and playing with the snow and playing the fish, they're only spooking a little area fish. They can't spook all those fish, but I could just watch them. They're running around and they're just spooking fish left and right. It's crazy.
Yeah. There's something to that. I'm curious if you have, maybe like a process, you know, now maybe, you know, you're refining some type of a process where, like, I guess, you know, I don't want to assume too much, but like, I can think about how if I was maybe scouting or, you know, kind of looking for fish, doing like some spot hopping or whatever, you know, I'd roll up on a spot that maybe, you know, using mapping or whatever, and I would just, you know, drill a couple of holes and fish them for a while and see if the fish are there, and then I'd go check another spot in the same way. But with forward sonar, it's almost like if I got a contact spot, like a weed point or a rock pile, or if they're just an area that I think the fish are, and you pull up maybe 100 feet short, just not to spook those fish, but to check and see if they're sitting on it with forward sonar, just to see if that's like the deal. Because once you do go drill on it, inevitably you're going to spook them off. But if you know whether or not you want to sit and wait for them to come back, knowing that they were there in the first place is like a thing, right? Like there's sort of I'm just sort of theorizing that in my head. I'm curious if you have a process, whether you're guiding or just fishing on your own.
I when I go to drill, I drill slow. I never go in fast mode. Once I break through, I don't flush it out. I leave slush in there because I've watched in live scope the slush go down 10 feet and just spook everything. So I break through slowly, and then I put my live scope down, scan 130 to 140 feet. When I see a school, then I make a practical decision on where are they going. I think about, are they moving up a break line? Are they moving this and that? And then I try to get ahead of them. What I try to do is I try to land between three schools. If I can do that and sit there, then one of the schools is bound to come in. Then I'll just try to call them in, or I'll herd them in or whatever. But I try to get in position where I think we have the best chance of getting the fish come underneath us. I never, you like, the worst thing about this time of year is every kid that's between, I don't know, 16 and 25 that just got a new live scope for the first time for Christmas. And I watch them just drill on top of fish and literally chase these fish from one end of the lake to the other lake. Yeah. And then finally they realize they can't do it. And what they did is just spooked fish for everyone. And fish that have been chased for a mile are not going to bite. It's like chasing a turkey and trying to call them in. Like, it just doesn't work. You can't do it. There's nothing worse than I see these people go there 20 feet, go there 20 feet. And they're just running these fish to death. I mean, it is what it is, but they finally learn after, it seems like they learn after about 3-4 weeks of what not to do. But it just kills. Like if a guy's out there and he's been waiting on these fish, and then these kids see the same fish, you know, and then they go over and drill on top of them and just spook the fish for everyone. It's just, oh, it just drives me insane.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's, you know, like, yeah, to be fair, right, you got to go through those growing pains. But that's the thing, is like, if people can kind of get educated that, hey, like if we're all kind of being careful.
Yes.
Like there's room for everybody. If most people are maybe being a little bit sensitive to these things.
The days I like fishing is when it's blowing 50 miles an hour and I know no one's running and gunning.
Yeah.
And then the fish will cooperate better. Honestly, that's the one best thing about South Dakota wind is I don't have people running around on windy days. Everyone kind of sets up shop, and then the fish settle down. They end up biting. The only downfall is you can do everything you want right. You can be set up to 30 schools, and then you have a giant pike come and mess everything up. Like these pike, that's another topic for another day. But these pike, I've noticed, and I noticed this quite some time ago when I used to run hard shacks and sleeper shacks, was that I would put these customers on some of the best fish. And I'm sure some of these other sleeper shack guys can contest to this, but you'll be on the best smaller walleye or perch bite, and then the guys be like, I haven't caught anything for 5 hours. I don't get it. The fish won't come underneath us. And then they put a camera down, and there's a pike that's 8 foot away that's like 40 inches just hanging out there. It's like he knows that you're calling in bait fish, and he is just waiting to ambush them. Like, and that's no joke. I've seen in my snow bear, if I sit in a spot too long and there's a big pike near you, it's like he knows that shadow that's casting to hang out there and wait for whatever's coming to him. And he won't come and eat our lures. So what I honestly do is I have a number 7 rip and wrap, and if I see him down there, I'll try to aim for his head to hit him on the head to spook him. I don't want him to bite it. But if he does bite it, I'll hook him, and I'll take him about 400 yards over and set him, release him in another hole. But
yeah,
I try to get him out of there, and or else we'll never see a fish the rest of the day. If that pike, it's like he plays defense underneath our shacks, and it's crazy. I don't know how many times I put a camera down there in clear water. I'm like, look, there's your culprit. Look at that pike just sitting there. He's just hanging out, you know, foot off the bottom, not doing nothing, not even reacting. But the second if you got a perch in, he would strike it and take you from you. But the perch won't come near him because they know he's just waiting there to ambush. And it's, I don't know how they adapted to that situation or if they just always have done that. But I've learned more and more, if you're sitting in a spot too long and you got the pike there, you better move, because you're never going to see a fish that day, ever. I mean,
I've heard bait trappers say that, man. This is no joke. I've heard bait trappers talk about that with muskies and pike, where, like, you know, like the Canadian guys where they're in backwoodsy, you know, or they'll fly in and then they're in a canoe. If they spook a big pike off in and around their traps, they realize like that trap will be empty.
Really?
Where, yeah. Like a pike. Yeah. I've heard that it might be far fetched to think that a pike is swimming around looking for a metal trap sitting somewhere, but there's something about how, like, maybe you're both thinking alike. Maybe you're both kind of picking your spots with the same thought process, like, oh, this looks like a place where I could catch a bunch of minnows. And that pike is probably thinking the same thing. And you just end up landing on, you know, like it just overlaps. But I've heard, you know, seasoned bait trappers talk about how if they get in a spot, like they'll literally, like they'll set a trap and then just spend some time slapping the surface of the water, whatever. Like just some funny stories about how they'll try their best to make sure that if there's a pike close by, that they can spook them best they can. Because like the minnows will come back. That's funny you say that, because I've literally had that conversation.
They're smart with bait creatures, trappers, man. They're very, very smart creatures. And I you'd think they're the dumbest things in the world because they bite on everything. I mean, they bite on hot dogs for the sake of argument. But for whatever reason, they've learned to adapt through fishermen. And I feel like they've been caught and released so many times, they just know what not to bite. But they're like, hey, I want an easy meal. I'm not going to work for it. I'll let these fishermen get these perch coming. I'll just take the fish from them. You know, it's quite crazy that we're in, you know, that the things we learn. If I knew what I knew, you know, if I wish I had a live scope in 2016, where we were catching 150 to 300 perch a day with clients, with ease, I'm like, was there more schools there, or we just spooked them now with live scope? Like, I don't understand. I've had discussion with numerous other guides that are buddies of mine, and I'm like, we used to catch a lot of fish with just Vexilars. How did we do that? And he's like, if I forget my live scope now, I'll drive 2 hours to go get it. I'll drive back, because yeah, I'll be so lost with it. I'll be like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, but I caught a lot of fish back then. It's like, you know, I have training wheels that I need to have every time when I go fishing, because I need those when I have, that's my live scope, is the training wheels. And I'm just like, if I have those, I don't know how to do it again. Like, I don't know how to ride a bike.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to just like know that technology's out there, where it's like, man, how many fish are around? What are they doing? If you know that piece of equipment exists that could help you, it's like, man, it's painful to say. The old version of yourself might think you're getting a little soft, but it's, I mean, whatever. Like, I think that clear water is a big part of it, but who am I to say? I think that there's a lot more clear water around than used to be. I think that's something. There's something to be said for that. You already mentioned that, but yeah, man. Well, one other topic that I wanted to get into with you. I don't know how deep we'll go. Probably pretty deep, but you know, you're with your guide career, and you got young kids. I think makes you a little bit uniquely qualified to talk about, and then kind of couple that with kind of the area that you fish, with all the fishing opportunities. I wanted to talk about taking kids fishing. Something that I probably don't talk about enough. I think all, you know, young dads probably think about this stuff all the time, you know, taking kids fishing. But for many of us, like me included, sometimes when I think about taking my kids fishing, it's kind of a nightmare thought. Like, of course, as a dad, I want to take my kids out fishing. I want to introduce them to fishing and have a good time and have a good experience. But it's not always. And I just constantly feel like I'm not prepared, or I'm doing things wrong, or I'm making bad decisions. And like, I got to figure out how to kind of play that dad part a little bit better. But as a guide for you, I'm sure you've been taking kids fishing probably long before you even had kids. I'm curious to get into this topic about what it's like to take kids fishing in, you know, Eastern South Dakota with all the opportunities that you have. What are some of the, what would be some big, you know, maybe some stories or just some, you know, recommendations or thought processes that you have that you're thinking about that are kind of specific to when you know you're going to be taking kids fishing, whether it's your own kids or whether you're going to do a guide trip, you know, where there's going to be kids that are less than 12 years old and pretty novice. Like, how do you try to make the best experience for them? I don't know if this is like a topic that you'd be prepared for or not. I'm kind of plopping it on you, but that's something that I'd kind of like to get into with you, man, if you're down for it.
Well, people ask me all the time, customers, as of the last year now, probably, well, actually more this year and beginning of the summer, they would ask me, hey, who's your worst clients? Like, what kind of is your worst clientele, you know? And I'd say my worst clients ever are my two kids. Because when I take them out fishing, my oldest, we were fishing for 30 seconds. I put him on my Snapchat all the time. And he's like, Dad, where are the fish is at? I'm like, dude, settle down. We'll find the fish. Daddy, drill in the hole. And I'm like, so they're the hardest ones to please right now, honestly. And for whatever reason, he's adapted to love catching pike because they're so mean looking. And we're starting to break them into, mine's going to be two and one's going to be four soon. And so they're watching me clean fish. And last 2 weeks ago, it was a fight for them. No, cut those, Dad, no cut those. And then all of a sudden it's like, cut the pike. And now he's like, we have to negotiate which fish I can cut for the customers, which one he can save. sometimes I'm up at 10 in the night and cleaning the fish that I quote unquote saved for him. And the next morning I'd tell him I had to release him to mommy, you know, and grandpa and grandma to go see swim there and why they're not in the tank anymore. But kids are something else. I mean, kids are demand a lot more energy than adults do. So I've been trying to introduce my kids to fishing, but I also haven't been trying to do it overly. I don't want to flood their life with fishing. And then when they get to be 8, 9, they don't want to fish anymore because that's all they know. So I honestly don't take them as much as I should. And also I was very cautious about taking them in this current ice conditions, because it just terrifies me thinking of us falling through and me trying to get my kids out of a side-by-side. So when I take them, it's a nice day and it's a gorgeous day. And I honestly, what I've been finding out, because my 3.5, he's going to be 4 in July, has caught more fish than most adults have in his life. And he's can reel in those fish and stuff like that. But I've been using jaw jackers lately, and it's Clam and a bunch of other companies now make them now where they automatically set the rod for you or set the hook for you. And for kids, it's great because the kids, the biggest thing is the reaction time to trying to set these hooks. So what I've been using is these jaw jackers, and I just will be sitting on the tailgate pretty much eating snacks all day, Doritos, whatever else the kids can find. And then a jaw jacker goes up and he runs over there, and 9 times out of 10, he slips before the ice. But if he grabs the rod and the fish is there, you just got to reel it. And he just loves it. So we've been doing that a lot when I have the kids on a nice day, and that seems to be working great for us. I mean, it's just a ball, and there's not many days we get where it's 46 like we did the other day, but we went out chasing smaller walleyes with some bigger walleyes, and he just, I mean, the fish are just biting left and right. He was just chasing left and right. And we don't have the bluegills like Minnesota or other places do. So we don't have the opportunities to just go in and catch a little fish. He's only caught big fish. The kid's never, I mean, he's got a 6 and an 8 pound walleye, and he's got, I mean, he's, a lot of times when we go out, only catch 5 or 6 big fish, but he's caught
I think his biggest pike's like a 33-inch pike. I mean, he reeled in himself. Like, it's just the kid's been spoiled. And so I'm afraid that he's going to hate it. So I'd only take him out every few weeks. I don't try to take him out. But right now they're obsessed with playing minnows and tanks. So I make sure they got minnows. And so I've always taken kids out guiding, but I've never had my own kids. So it's kind of different when you take your own kids versus someone else's kids. Like, I can tell my kids no and this and that, you know, other kids can't. You're trying to, you know, get these kids on a pile of fish and you're trying to keep their attention high. And I found that I bring the iPad and stuff like that to entertain my 2-year-old. Cause he doesn't know what's going on. He just said, sure. Oh, fishies. No. He just find out he's playing in the slush. I target more lakes with walleyes, I would say, around here for those smaller walleyes, lakes that are up and coming that have just abundancy of fish. And if I can get them on a tip up biter or something like that, then I can keep them busy. Or else in our hard shacks, we have 3 TVs. We find ourselves watching Bluey on one and then the fish on the other and then a camera on the other one. And that pretty much keeps them somewhat occupied. But the problem is the kids want to play with the camera then. So we're constantly turning that camera and you pretty much get sick to your stomach watching that thing turn. And they have no delicacy of turning it slow. It's 90 miles an hour. And it's just, they are the hardest things to keep occupied on the water. But when the fishing's going, it's great. When it's not going, it's tough. So I like I said, I only take them when it's nice so they can play outside, this and that. But the downfall when they're playing outside, they're spooking our fish. Nine times out of 10 is when we're on a clear body of water, I'm trying to like, don't, you know, run over there. You're going to spook the fish. They got to check every bait on every one of them. Now I showed him how to check the bait. So he's doing his rounds. Thankfully in South Dakota, we can have 4 rods per person. So if me and my dad and 2 kids go out, it's 16 rods. It takes him a long time to check all the bait on him, but he's just checking the bait. The holes are perfectly clear of ice. No, he's got to scoop them. He's the biggest helper right now, but he's also his worst enemy because he's spooking the fish every 5 seconds. He's got to check this bait. Sometimes when he's checking it, it bites right in his hand. He got a walleye bit the other day. It just bit right in his hand and I got fishy. And that's all he says, you know, and 9 times and he doesn't set the hook. So it gets off. But that's the beauty of those jawjackers. They do all the work for the kids. So they're not losing fish and they're not disappointed and their attention stays higher because they're catching fish. The adults don't have to set the hook for him. So the kids feel like it's more on them than anyone else. You know, they don't have any assistance because he doesn't want any help. It's daddy. I do, you know? So, that's all it is. And it's great. I love it. I love watching them catch fish and them excited about it. And the problem is every fish we catch has to go into the bucket. And I have to somehow convince them to let a 3 or 4 inch perch go. Cause we're not cleaning 4 inch perch. And so it's negotiations on the ice. My negotiating skills are getting a lot better these days.
The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. There's phenomenal pan fishing. There's a fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. If you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglaciallakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description of this podcast. Making great gear choices is a big deal when it comes to being efficient and effective each and every time we head out onto the ice. Head to summitfishingequipment.com to check out what they've got. As a pioneer of forward facing sonar portability, their shuttle design and carbon fiber pole mounting kit make it super easy to switch from boat usage right out onto the ice. Again, head to the website. The link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code SUMMIT10 at checkout for a discount. Some people might think that this is just like, you know, so obvious, but man, having my own kids, I definitely feel like, You know, I didn't know how to take kids fishing very well before having kids, and I'm still definitely learning a lot every single time I go out how I can make it better. But I think those are like super, super awesome points. But I mean, you've been guiding a long time. When you guide groups that have kids in them, is it typically like, you know, the parents, you know, they want you to, like, if the kids have a good day, then everybody has a good day. Or is it sometimes like the adults want to catch fish and the kids are along for that? I'm curious if you have any, like, you know, guide stories from back in the day where you just have a really, really good time just putting kids on fish.
Yeah. 9 times out of 10, when customers call me and they say they have kids coming along, I ask them, is it about the kids or about the adults? Not everyone says it's about the kids. So when I know we're going into taking kids out, that are a certain age, we're just going to go after numbers. I said, you know, I'll say, hey, we're going to go to a numbers lake where we got to rummage through fish to get keepers. I don't know how many keepers we're going to catch, but we're just going to rummage through fish. And that way the kids stay active. 90% of my customers love that idea because they think that's the better idea to do than to try to get them just keepers. But then you'll have some customers like, yeah, my kid's been fishing for, you know, his whole life and he wants to get big fish. Okay, we'll do that. But every kid's different, seems like these days. Not every kid's the same. Some kids just want to go out and be with their family, and you know, and I've met some kids and we had a tough day and they were the most patient kids in the world, and I was just so disappointed I couldn't get him on a pile of fish, but he was so happy about catching 2 fish or 3 fish. I'm just like, man, I have some new hoodies coming out because of reasons like that. It has my guiding page in the front and the back. It says should have been here yesterday. So that's always been kind of the joke about things, you know, like, because I've had customers that even show up like, I bet yesterday's bite was pretty good. And I was like, just laughing, like, here's the picture, you know, like, and like figures, yeah, every time, you know, like, you just land on one of those days, the fish just don't want to not be as aggressive as they were the day before or whatnot. And, but the kids, you know, all the kids seem to be, I've never had a bad kid, to be honest with you. I did have one customer. I had a brand new Ranger boat though, and his kid had a brand new pocket knife, and he was trying to cut his own line and sliced right through my seat. And I was like, oh my God.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I was just like, oh, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I was like, yeah, I get it. But I was like, let's use scissors next time.
Yeah.
Well, that was just like a heartbreak in my brand new first Ranger boat. It was like 3 weeks old and I have a big slice down the seat after the kid wanted to use his own knife. And I get it, but I was like, don't do it on the, you know, and I was like, oh man, that just dropped my stomach for the day. But now it's just funny. Now I laugh about it. It is what it is. It's water underneath the bridge. Can't do nothing about it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Initial thing. But my kids are going to probably do 10 times worse things than that. So I can't really blame.
Yeah. Yeah. Nate. Yeah. You know, if you really wanted to, like, learn a lot or get way more dialed with your set line sort of routine, which I agree with you 100% on your earlier point that set lines are so in right now. You know, you look at some of the rule changes in Minnesota where they're allowing automatic hook setting devices or whatever, like, whether it's rule changes or just, you know, what we're all doing to sort of combat the spooky fish, the set lines are so in right now. And I think your point was spot on earlier. So I'm curious about your set line game. Like, what is sort of the spectrum of equipment that you use and just kind of what some of your setups are and just kind of how you kind of choose your pattern of you know, where you're going to set these things up and things like that. Some of your decision-making process when you are out there with, whether it's 3-4 clients or, you know, or your family, like you said, you know, you can use, say, a dozen lines or whatever. Like, how are you setting them up and just kind of your whole, you know, spectrum of equipment as well?
I used to use a lot of like tungsten and stuff like that for my set lines and whatnot. Right now, I've really been focused in on anything I use is a red treble hook and a split shot. Seem to be the kind of the key where I don't lose as many fish, and it I don't know that, or the other thing that I've always used the most that for some reason they'll never come out with again is the gold Gensworm. I made half my career on that gold Gensworm, and I had a company make me like 1,000 one time, and now they're out of business of the gold Gensworm, and it's actually been a pinnacle to my career. But I run that a lot for whatever reason. I don't know why that is. It could be just a thing in my head. But
when I was at Devil's Lake one time, I seen that they had the same thing where they had someone make them a pile of gold Gens worms. I'm like, well, it's just not me. It's clearly a lure that's caught a lot of fish and it's proven, but there's always been rumors they use real gold for it. So that's why they don't gold plated. And I don't know. That's what Lindy was joking with me and Ted Takasaki, one of my great buddies, I think he mentioned that too. He's like, yeah, I think we use like real gold plated or something like that because it wouldn't chip. But we just couldn't afford to do it. I'm like, why don't you just jack the price up? Because I would go through gas station around here and I'd find like a whole cart of them. I'm in there like $1.60 and I bought the whole thing. They catch a lot of fish, man. I don't know what it is, but that's kind of what I do. And then I just do a bobber and a slip knot and that's it. I've been gravitating more to those rubber slip knots than the actual string ones. The string just make me mad. They just kind of get loose and whatever. And I just over those things. So I run like a 6 or 8 pound test on my set lines. So that way that rubber holds on that line better. And I tell you what, I don't care how old you are. If you don't get excited about a bobber going down, you probably should pick a different sport because a bobber going down, you never know what that's going to bite. You don't know what it is. And it's super exciting. Like as an adult, I'm like watching this other adult set the hook. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm like, my heart's racing for him because I can anticipate what's going to, when he sets the hook and hear that drag go, I'm like, oh, we're on, you know, or that swing and a miss, like, oh, he set the heart too soon or too, you know, late or whatever. It's just all those emotions go through my head because it's not like a quick strike. It's like that slow, methodical bobber going down. And you're like, should I take it? I'm like, how big was minnow? You know, I'm like, are we using a chub? I'm like, all right, feed it a little longer. You know, just the anticipation is just running through everyone's. We're all just super excited to see what it's going to be, you know, kind of deal. And it's just, I mean, the emotions that go through your head when that bobber's going down, it's just hard to explain. Like I tell customers, if you don't like that, I don't know what to do for you. I mean, that's the last fishing. Yeah.
Do you feel like it's work? It's been a helpful tool with the perch bite too? You know, is there sort of a story there for you where that's been a factor?
Certain bodies of water, shallow bodies of water. When I first started guiding and I used to take like 20 people out. It was crazy. But what I did is I had buckets and buckets and buckets of bobbers and we would fish these shallow bodies of water and I'd run 60 bobbers and we'd get limits every day. And just set lines would just, I'd have customers like, I want to jig. I'm like, okay, you jig over there. I'm going to run 8 bobber rods here and we'll see who catches more fish. By the end of the day, I got, you know, my limit and his limit. And he's like, yep, we're running bobbers tomorrow. I mean, it's just crazy how effective people don't realize having 4 rods versus 1 can be, you know? I've got so many of these HT. I used to have partners and buddies and clam and HT back in the day. And I used to be like, you got any old rods I can buy? Cause I just need like 50, you know, dead stick rods. And I got these rods that are like stiff as a bone and like reels that are just like two size too big. And we just put bobbers on those things. I'm like, I don't care what they look like. I just needed to have a bobber on it, you know? And I had the weirdest looking rods. I had these HT ones that are neon pink and blue. And then we used to do a grid system, kind of like a tic-tac-toe deal. And I'd put a bucket with a color of which one it is. So when I'd be sitting there in my truck, I'm like, hey, bucket number 4 rods up, that bobber's down, you know, like, I mean, it almost looked like the fish palooza, whatever they drill, like 10,000 holes. That's what I did. And we just moved out. And when the school came through, we'd have like 6 or 7 bobbers and these guys would be running around like, you know, kids and setting the hooks. And I'm just going over and checking all the depths with the bobbers, make sure the slip knot didn't do. And I'd be checking bait. That's all I did for like 5 years was just check bait. And I called myself a glorified babysitter because I would just babysit bobber rods. But we caught a lot of fish back then. And then we went back to jigging. And then, you know, we still caught a lot of fish, but now we're finding ourselves back to dead sticks and catching a lot of fish again. So it's just, I don't know. The evolution is just like doing a 180 on us. And you think we'd come to a new style of fishing, but it's just, we're just coming back to the old times. And I've seen a lot of old timers that fish with the sticks and the ice and they're catching a lot of fish now. And like, you know, and the guy was joking, you don't need a live scope. Look at this limit. I'm like, he's not wrong there. You know, like he did catch a lot of fish that day. So he's a great guy. He only goes and fishes the 4 rods and the buckets and just sits in his truck and watches them. And he does very well. And I can't, you know, I can't lie. He catches fish and he does a very good job of it. And it's just the old school way.
Yeah. I think that a lot of people's sort of like arsenal of rods is going to, mine certainly does, but like more and more where you're right. Like if you look at the last 10 years, you know, a lot of money's been invested into, you know, nicer jig rods, right? Like you can get a, you know, just look at the custom rods and stuff like that you can get nowadays that are super cool. You know, but, you know, not a ton of people care to afford to have like 20, you know, $150 ice rods, but a lot of people have, you know, kind of like their A setup, and you've got all these rods from that you've, you know, if they're not broke, why throw them away? You might have rods from when you were a kid, you know, or whatever, like your whole life, you got, you know, a wall full of rods and probably a few of them that have been collecting dust. And, you know, you almost might $20 combos from Fleet Farm from way back in the day. You almost might make fun of yourself for what you used to fish with, but all of a sudden, well, pretty much any rod looks fine, you know, over a bobber, right? It's like a lot of people probably have a lot of rods that they haven't jigged with for a really, really long time with this remote set line deal that is a huge hot topic for a lot of good anglers and guides and just anybody that likes catching fish. You know, even if your preferred method, we all agree we'd rather jig up a nice fish and feel the bite and set the hook or whatever. But man, like, use all the lines you possibly can just to capitalize on whatever you can capitalize on and learn as much as you can. But you don't have to have sexy rods. It might be an old, you know, $20 combo that you got for Christmas when you were 14 years old and you haven't used that rod forever, an old stiff fiberglass, whatever. Man, if you think about it, if you ain't throwing them away yet, you've probably got a whole bucket full of nice looking bobber rods. Well, what else, man? What else is going on down there in South Dakota? Is there any, like, as far as, I guess, I don't know. I guess I didn't ask you super specifically, like, about, you know, where the bites are happening and what the ice conditions are like down there. Is there, you know, some of the more named lakes or some of the bigger, more community lakes that are down there in eastern South Dakota, man? Is there any kind of like bite reports or as far as like ice reports that are worth mentioning right now, like kind of like the current status update?
I honestly stay away from fishing reports because I always feel like I'll be liable if I tell someone it's safe ice. So the ice is just always, it's, oh man, it's just this year with a warm spell, like I've seen shorelines starting to go and this and that. And I mean, it's, I stay away from any lake that's a pile of people because the shorelines go fast because of landings. And I don't, nine times, I don't honestly, I haven't guided on Wall Bay or Bitter, the most popular lakes, or Ponset in a long time because I just don't fish with a bunch of people. Nine times out of 10, the lake I'm going to fish, there's two or three people out there max. So I try to avoid the crowds, and I try to avoid, because you might hear one guy limiting up, but you don't hear the 300 people that didn't catch a fish that day. I don't like being on a lake where I can't control the outcome of my fishing. I feel like anywhere with a pile of people, I'm limited to how many people are going to drive by me, so I avoid those. So I know there's some fish being caught, but I don't honestly, like I said, I don't know how many people didn't catch fish. I know I have some neighbors that fish these lakes, you know, they Ponset and Dry and all that stuff, and I hear about them not catching a fish, and I hear online, oh yeah, we did real good, but you don't hear the 30 other people that didn't do good. So I just avoid those lakes. I just feel like there's too many people that spear them, and I've seen people run into the spear holes, and I don't fish them. I don't really have an answer for you on those because I just avoid them like the plague. I see a school of people and I go the other way. I don't like it. I have anxiety fishing around people and I don't like it. I stick to my own.
Is there any good information? Like, this is, I think it's been a long time since I've had this conversation with anybody, but like, you know, from like, when it comes to fishing reports, like if somebody asked you for a fishing report, like if I, you know, just sitting here now, like if I were to say that I was going to come down to your area, I'm not looking for waypoints or anything like that, but there's probably some information that could be helpful, like maybe what guys are catching them on, how deep they're fishing, or, you know, just there's other elements to a fishing report that sometimes come up, but maybe people aren't paying attention to them because they're just trying to figure out where somebody fished 2 weeks ago when they had said luck. I'm interested to you, like, is there anything that you could, you know, discern, or when you're talking with your network of people, like, are there certain things like that can be communicated that, a lot of this stuff is so old hat to you nowadays, but if you were to think objectively about it, is there, like a different kind of fishing report that you feel like could be worthwhile?
So we don't have South Dakota. We don't have hardly any structure. 99% of the lakes have no structure. It's all basin fishing. So it's very, very tough to be a fishing guide out here because the fish are moving so much. There's no one spot. I get guys probably 20 calls a week. Can you just give me some waypoints? I'll give you some money. No, I can't, because there's no place I can just put you on a spot and catch fish. I got to move 500 times a day. That's how I catch fish. There is no just sitting down and catching fish anymore. It just doesn't happen that way, unfortunately. So for me to stay on a bite, I have to stay on a lake consistently and go there day in, day out. So, yes, there is some times where we have residual weeds into the winter and they're holding to weed lines. That is one thing that I tell guys, you know, if there's a spot with weeds, but not always the case.
Sure.
A lot of times it's just the fish are – the bloodworms out here is what they 9 times out of 10 they're feeding on, or freshwater shrimp, and they just kind of move with those. So in my experience in these bigger lakes that I've had waypoints for 15 years of fishing, they can kind of put me in the general area where I think the fish would be at that time of year based on the bloodworms coming through, but not always the case. But I can probably get within a quarter mile where some of these bigger lakes where these fish are – moving to that time of year. So that's kind of like I do. But to tell someone, when I have buddies come down, I always tell them, I need you to go try this lake, this lake, this lake. 9 times out of 10, that's what my buddies do. Is they're like, yeah, we'll go try a lake. I'm like, I've heard reports of maybe this is going. I need to go check it out. And they'll go and check it out from the guy, yeah, that was amazing. Or no, we can tell that they're just shut down now. And most of my buddies, they're all about exploring. They don't want to fish a crowd like me. That's why we're buddies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're like, send us some 5 lakes you want to go try. I'm like, do try these lakes. And normally one of the 5, they're going to smoke them. They're like, yeah, we smoked them. And then I'm like, are you guys fishing tomorrow? No, go beat them up. And I'll go beat them up. If not, if they're fishing tomorrow, I'll stay away from them until they're done, you know, kind of deal. It's just a respect thing. but that's kind of what I do. And it works out pretty good for me. It's just trying to find new lakes that try to stay ahead of the bite. That's the only way we stay successful in this game is we don't chase bites. We try to make our own bites. And that's how to be successful in fishing. If you're chasing bites, you're chasing dreams, I call it, basically. It's tough. It's really, really tough. But there's nothing more rewarding than going on a lake that no one's there and you just smoke the fish and you're like, oh my goodness, this is so amazing. Like, I can't tell you as a fisherman, that just makes me so proud.
That is 100% the thing, man. I feel like, doing that exploring, but a good point that finding like good or popular fishing reports is just a good way to kind of maybe eliminate some water. Like wherever everybody's talking about how good the bite is a good way to kind of know, well, I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. I mean, just because they say, let's say, bitters going, well, wherever there's a crowd of people is probably where it used to be. So then I'm like, okay, if there is a bite out here, let's go where no one else is going. Let's go find our own fish. Because honest to God, what I've found is you get away from the crowd and you do find your own fish, they're more aggressive and they will bite. And you're going to have way better luck than if you're in a crowd of people. Like, if you're in a crowd of people, I don't see many guys getting limits anymore. It just doesn't happen. The fish, if there is fish there, they're being spooked, educated, lockjaw, basically.
Yeah.
But the old days where you just drive up to another guy and start fishing, next thing you know, it's a crowd. I mean, more power to the people that like doing that, sure. But I hear a lot of those guys, like, we didn't catch a darn thing out there. I'm like, well, there's probably a reason for that. But, you know, to each their own. You know, you can't educate people enough about finding your own fish that are, you know, less pressured than how aggressive they can be. Some people just want to go out fish for an hour and they want to drive up to a big crowd and they want to try their luck. And if they get one fish, they're happy about it. Great. But, crowd fishing is just, I've not seen many people do good. I've got a lot of lodging down here. I got a few lodges. I got a few houses. And I'll be talking to people like, hey, how was fishing? Oh, we went into the crowd of people today. We caught 2 fish. You know, it was really slow. I'm like, did you try outside the crowd? Well, no, we didn't know where to go. I was like, well, how about tomorrow you try outside the crowd and see what happens, you know? And then they'll be like, yeah, we smoked them. I'm like, oh, there you go, you know. Well, we always used to come up here and just go where the crowd's at. I'm like, yeah, well, now it's different, you know. I mean, the fish have changed. They evolved, I guess. I mean, because, you know, they want set hooks now instead of jigging. So I tell people just try to find your own bite, and you're going to do very, very well when you do find them. You got to put the work in. That's what it is. It's work. It's called fishing for reason, not catching. So that being said, people that find their own fish generally
have more success. And then if they're on their own, they probably can come there the next day and catch them too again.
Yeah. You know, I used to be that way. Like Jason and just fishing in the industry taught me a lot of that. Like I would have been somebody that would have been intimidated by just going and drilling holes where they're, you know, not knowing, you know, what I was doing, like not knowing what kind of spot I was trying to drill on or what I should have been looking for, whether I was fishing around people or not. But like I would have needed my hand held to go and look for fish, like where there's, you know, where there's nobody at, like no other points of direction. And then I just always thought that people that were good at that, like they knew stuff, like they knew something about a spot, or they knew something that I didn't, and I just could not capture that, you know, confidence and information. But not realizing that a lot of times it's just guys that are adventurous, willing to go drill where there's no holes been drilled. And that's like all I need to know. Like I can gain confidence from just fishing in a hole. Like I'll work backwards. Like if I start marking fish, like I'll work backwards as to why they might be there. But it wasn't as a sophisticated decision to make as I thought it was before I realized, like, you know, like moving and checking a new spot or just going away from a crowd to get away from a crowd. I there was a time where I couldn't wrap my head around that at all either. But yeah, I appreciate the conversations as always. But just for housekeeping, if people have questions or want to look you up or whatever, how can they do that?
They can follow me on Facebook at South Dakota Fishing Guide, or else my website. I have a couple websites, but one of them is the easy one to remember is sdicefish.com.
sdicefish.com. There it is, man. Well, cool. Dude, I appreciate it, man.